Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. This episode of The Media Twits is brought to you by CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, offering an intensive, cutting-edge, three-semester Master of Arts in Journalism and a unique one-semester advanced certificate in entrepreneurial journalism, and CUNY JCamp, a series of continuing professional development workshops focused on emerging trends and skill sets in the industry. Learn more at journalism.cuny.edu.
Along with Rafat Ali, entrepreneur and former founder of, or I guess the founder of Paid Content. You're not a former founder, huh?
They can't take that away from me. How are you doing, Mark?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Good. It's been a relative, after the dramatics of the last few weeks, this week has been relatively quiet.
That's true. Except on the newspaper front. This is kind of our newspaper related show. We don't talk that much about newspapers, but there seems to be a lot going on as far as new business models and new attempts by newspapers to do things online and digitally. So we have to give them their props, even if we don't read them that much.
True, and some of the drama continues from past weeks. Of course, Yahoo, AOL, TechCrunch stuff continues.
Right, and as you know, we talked to Kara Swisher about what was going on there, and you know, there was a question as to what Michael Arrington's role at TechCrunch would be, and he, you know, the TechCrunch Disrupt conference, he was there, and unveiled this T-shirt saying "Unpaid Blogger," and that he was leaving TechCrunch as the editor, but would continue in the venture fund, which was kind of what we expected, I think, last week.
Yeah, and it was, I tweeted this yesterday, it was the day before, one of the companies that he invested in is was part of the finalist or something, and then Eric Schoenfeld, who's the new editor, wrote something on TechCrunch, and then Arrington commented saying, "Don't put words in my mouth." And it's conflicted in every possible way. Everything is conflicted in every possible way. And
Arianne because Huffington, now Eric was writing about a company that Arrington invested in. Is that what happened?
Well, he said that Arrington had no part in making the final decision. Arrington said, "Of course, I had a part in the final decision. So don't put words in my mouth." It's just, it's so conflicted that Arianna, who took a lot of bad press or bad PR, at least in the blogosphere and Twitter sphere over the last few weeks, looks brilliant literally the week after for her decision, because it just is so conflicted on every level and it's playing out in front of everybody. I mean, the conference was I guess a culmination and I don't know what you call it, visualization of every conflict that all this situation can bring. So
right, as far as having a publication, having a venture fund, having a conference about startups where you might fund them, where you're actually writing about them. I mean, all those things are being mixed up into one big pot.
Yeah, and it's completely there for everybody to see at the conference.
Yeah. Yeah, what a mess. But it gives us a lot to talk about, which is good.
That's true.
As Kara was saying, you know,
continuing.
Thank God for Michael Arrington and, you know, Carol Bart.
It's like the Sarah Palin of the tech world. Keep on giving.
So. No question. So that we're talking about all these newspapers and you know, we've talked about this before a little bit. I mean, I get no print newspapers. I mean, I'm still looking at the SF Gate, the Chronicle, the New York Times, you know, what I can see for free on apps. So you're getting the Sunday Times in order to get all your access to them. What are you doing with the print paper?
I am reading it. Saturday, Sunday, actually. It's not just Sunday, Saturday, Sunday. I think you and I have talked about in the past, I like the peaceful experience of the print newspaper and almost like a retro weekend. I get up in the morning, have tea, instead of usually reaching for my iPad where I could read the same thing, I reach for the paper and I sort of slowly go through it over the weekend if I'm not doing anything. So,
you're really taking to print now.
Well, only for the weekend, but yeah. And only for New York Times.
All right, so let's go down what we're going to talk about on this episode this week. We'll be talking first about Boston Globe has launched its new bostonglobe.com site, a very well-designed, very clean site that also costs money unless you're a print subscriber. And we'll be talking to the publisher of Boston Globe, Chris Mayer. And then we'll talk about The Guardian announced that it is launching a new, it literally just launched a new site based in the U.S. called GuardianNews.com that actually aims to cover more than the U.S. And they've hired a couple kind of top-notch people for the site. And then finally, we'll talk a little bit about Philadelphia newspapers, and Philly.com are offering up a subsidized tablet for $99 if you do 2 years of print of digital subscriptions. So we'll talk about that last. First, let's talk about the Boston Globe and its new pay site. Boston Globe, it's now called, they're basically running two sites. There's Boston.com, which will remain free, and then BostonGlobe.com, which will be is free just for this month, and then it'll become free just for print subscribers. If you're not a print subscriber, you'll have to pay $3.99 per week to get access to it. The site is built in a way in HTML5 so that you really, it will look, it's basically optimized for various platforms, whether it's the web, your laptop, your iPad, your iPhone, whatever you're going to look at it, Android, it should look pretty similar. It's been lauded for its design, but the question is, you know, is it going to be confusing to have this kind of free site and pay site? And the free site will have some Boston Globe print stories, but only 5 per day. You know, it's a little bit confusing.
Yeah, I mean, my views are, I think, on the design front, what you mentioned, it looks gorgeous, very simple, very minimalistic, very, very hip, which I don't know how that would translate for an average Boston user, but it clearly is very clean. From the dual site strategy and the confusion and stuff, remember we were talking about the exact same confusion before New York Times, or when New York Times launched or announced their pricing strategy. And
right,
I think what has happened is, sure, there may have been, but once you subscribe, it's done, it's over, there's no confusion, it's completely transparent to you. You don't even think about, I mean, you're paying for it. Will that happen with Boston.com and Boston Globe? That I don't know. I think that they're taking, of course, the New York Times template, the learnings from it, I'm sure.
And they're owned by New York Times.
They're owned by New York Times. Yeah. So I think they're taking that learning, and I think they could possibly make it work.
Let's talk to Chris Mayer and see what he has to say. So Chris Mayer is publisher of the Boston Globe and head of the New England Media Group, both of which are subsidiaries of the New York Times Company. He's responsible for Boston Globe and Boston.com, the Worcester Telegram and Gazette, Globe Direct, the Globe's direct mail subsidiary. He also oversees the company's investment in Metro Boston, the free daily paper. He joined the Boston Globe in 1984 in the Information Services Department. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here.
So so you guys just unveiled this new BostonGlobe.com kind of paid site to go alongside the free Boston.com, and we were just talking a little bit about that move. The one thing that's very different that we haven't seen as much in the past is having these two sites. Tell us a little bit about your thoughts behind having the two separate sites.
There were really a couple of things that kind of went into the decision. The first is that we realized we had never really had the Boston Globe have its own front door in the digital space. The Boston Globe content that that came out of the newsroom was always up on Boston.com, but it was never in a specific the Boston Globe section. There was Today's Paper, which you could go to off of the nav bar on Boston.com, but it wasn't very much like, it wasn't a very consistent reading experience with the way you would read the Boston Globe. Right. So that was one thing that we noticed. The other that we noticed is readers were coming to the to Boston.com for a couple of different reasons. One was to find out what was going on, to scan the headlines, to follow sports, to look at the photo galleries, to look for breaking news, to shop for a car, to shop a daily deal, or just find out a little bit more about what's going on, kind of like a town square or a community portal feel. The other set of readers were coming to Boston.com to read the Boston Globe. And yet, like I just said, the reading experience for the Boston Globe really wasn't what we would consider kind of our best foot forward in terms of people who really wanted to navigate all that the Boston Globe newsroom had had put out for that day's edition. So so that was another observation. And then lastly, we in the research that we were doing, found that about half of the people who were coming to Boston.com didn't realize that they were reading the Boston Globe.
And so you're missing branding on that in a way.
Yeah, and so taken all together, it suggested an opportunity that with the two different audiences and the two different brand experiences, that we could continue to provide Boston.com for the readers who wanted that free experience. It would be an ad-supported experience. They understand and will live with a more disruptive reading experience that comes with a website that's supported by advertising, and that we could create a real front door for the Boston Globe in the digital space and put a lot of effort into making that reading experience be truly excellent, multi-platform, and comfortable for the people who are familiar with the brand and like reading us, particularly in print, but are moving digital. But also so while there's that comfort factor, all of having the consistency of fonts, for instance, and the navigation terminology, the sectioning components are all consistent, that we could also extend it into taking full advantage of what the digital provides, which is much more multimedia and longer storytelling than we are able to do in print, and really kind of build up that environment even more.
Now, what did you learn from what New York Times did, your parent company? I mean, they obviously just did their paywall and their metered wall. Is there anything, any lessons you took from what they did?
Yeah, several. They were one of the major lessons I think that we take away from that is that there's a significant number of people who are willing to pay for quality journalism in a digital format. And if you see the sort of general trend of people paying for apps and more purchases whether that's in the audio or the video space, you see a higher willingness of people to pay for digital content. And the New York Times is a demonstration that people will pay for quality news and information and journalism in the digital space. So that was kind of one observation. As far as general support, the Times experience on how they marketed the message of the different access, whether you're a member or whether you're a visitor, was something that we were able to take and use with this idea of being a subscriber and going to Boston Globe versus just continuing to visit Boston.com. And then lastly, there's just obviously the benefit that we have from the sharing of a certain amount of infrastructure and technology support, strategic planning support, and things like that across the company.
Of course, this is Rafat. How do you what are your expectations on local versus national audiences, and what was the split before on the free site, and how do you see it shaking out with BostonGlobe.com and Boston.com now?
Boston.com had about half of its audience come from outside of the New England area. We do about 6 million uniques per month, with, again, about half of those coming from outside of New England. And I think our expectation is that we won't see Boston.com content or Boston.com traffic, fall off. And I have made a fair number of efforts to ensure that doesn't happen. But I think the BostonGlobe.com reading experience will skew more heavily towards that greater Boston, greater New England readership base that has been the more traditional readership base that you'd see, you know, years ago in print and still to this day in print.
And then with BostonGlobe.com's redesign, which looks gorgeous and beautiful and very minimalistic. In terms of ad units, are you going to make an effort to sell ads for BostonGlobe.com?
Yeah, initially BostonGlobe.com has ad positions that are for this free trial period are sponsored by Coldwell Banker Residential Brokerage, and so you see those on, for instance, the upper right hand side of the homepage above right. The virtual fold. As you scroll down, you'll see one below the fold. There are certain individual section sponsorships that are available as well. And right now we're still looking at the different advertising model. We certainly will have advertising. All of the research going back to print suggests that advertising is part of the reading experience that the readers appreciate. It just gets to be something that's a very large negative when, for some readers, when it becomes disruptive. And makes the reading experience disjointed, and so we've worked to incorporate the ad positions in a way that doesn't distract from the reading experience, and yet still allows that same brand association and that same serendipity of being able to find the message. As for the way we're positioning it, we have the same registration system underneath BostonGlobe.com and Boston.com, so we'll have the ability to be able to provide targeted solutions to advertisers across the different sites. But really the way we're looking at the audience is suggesting that it's one more digital alternative or digital opportunity we have in our toolkit to sell.
I'm curious about now this design, this great HTML5 design. That's something that a place like FT Financial Times has basically taken to the point of just creating an actual web app and going around the app store, which is something you, I guess, could do. Do you guys have a stance or a philosophical thought on about being in the app store, not being in the app store?
I don't think we have a philosophical stance at this point. What we prioritized initially was for BostonGlobe.com to be able to have a solution that worked across any device and looked terrific and felt consistent. And with the responsive design aspects of the way it was built, it does resize, reorient, and reposition itself so that it looks terrific as a three-column reading experience on a screen in a sort of portrait mode on a tablet as a two-column reading experience. It also reads very easily with familiar look and feel and navigation. And on a smartphone, as a single-column reading experience, you have that same kind of comfortable environment where the navigation is consistent, the terminology is consistent, the sectioning is consistent. If we came out of the gate with a solution that was device-dependent initially, it would have been a real challenge for us to sync up the user experiences across all of those different platforms and really figure out how we would best engage with our readers. And this is really designed as a first and foremost a reading experience that we wanted to provide. For instance, in Boston.com, we have dedicated mobile apps in the Apple Store for real estate, for instance, and we have looked to build out purpose-built apps around other specific things. You know, we're toying with this notion around the Boston Marathon. Should that be a pure smartphone dedicated mobile app, for instance, as opposed to a cross-platform reading experience? So I think we're going to continue to look at what are the opportunities that are out there to engage with the readers and what solution, which is not just the way we develop it, but also for which platforms we develop it, would best connect and serve the needs of those readers.
So, but for BostonGlobe.com itself, you don't have either a web app or an app in the app store at the moment.
No, we do not. If you go to BostonGlobe.com on whatever device you happen to have, whether that's desktop through any of the browsers or if you're using an Apple device on the Safari, you'll get a reading experience that is very app-like. I mean, the HTML5 allows certain features of the native devices to be able to be handled within the environment of the web. The web solution, so we can, for instance, support touch on tablets and on mobile using this HTML5 solution. So it feels like you're in an app from that regard. As for things like offline reading, we had built in a My Saved feature where you can build up your list of interested of stories in which you're interested and save those. And that then, because it's accessing the website from any device, that My Saved list basically moves with you regardless of which device you're reading on.
So it sounds like you have a lot of the features that an app might have already, and you know, maybe there's a question as to whether you even need to have an app if everything really is in there in the browser.
Yeah, which I think comes back around to what's the audience expectation, and are we meeting or exceeding the desires of the readership base? And and what we tried to do, because we were coming out with a web solution that we knew would be enthusiastically consumed on mobile devices, tablets and smartphones, we wanted to make sure that the features that people had come to expect from those devices, such as a touch interface as well as a component of offline reading, were supported.
How do you bring new readers to subscribe to bostonglobe.com, meaning how do you market it in market? Are you looking at going offline in terms of marketing?
We have a marketing campaign that actually launched today. It uses basically all of the different marketing tools that we and others have at their disposal. It uses certainly our own media. It uses other mass media. We're using radio, television, outdoor, and we have a series of social aspects to it as well. We have the transit stations are equipped with the signage that has QR codes. So if you're standing there with a mobile device and you shoot the QR code, it'll take you to the device and kind of quickly let you experience what that is.
Are you guys worried about losing kind of search juice in a way through Google? I saw someone at the Boston Phoenix had written a story saying that they're actually excited that, you know, some of their arts coverage would show up higher up in the search results than the Boston Globe now because it's going behind a paywall. Is that something you thought about?
Certainly continuing to be part of the conversation and continuing to use search as an entry point into either or both sites is something that we had thought about. BostonGlobe.com does support first click free, whether that comes through search and social. So to the extent that the reporters who have their followings are, for instance, tweeting out the fact that there's a story or that gets posted up on their Facebook page, the people who are following them will have access to read that, even if they're not a Boston Globe subscriber.
Is there a limit on stories you can see that way, or how does that work?
No, we very much want to encourage people to be reading us, and we think this is a really good way to do it. And we also very strongly believe that the experience of reading within BostonGlobe.com is another compelling selling point as to why the people who do it frequently would want to subscribe. If I sort of look at the app experience, people who are paying for apps are often doing so because the environment is just that much more enjoyable. And it isn't that there aren't free alternatives, but at some point, the environment in which you're in and the experience that you have while you're reading makes a difference. And so we really wanted to hit both of those head on, come up with a tremendous reading experience and feature sort of front and center the quality of the journalism that we can produce, not just every day, but all day long, because it, again, as a digital solution, we are able to handle breaking news and continuous updates throughout the day.
We noticed, we've been talking a lot about the New York Times paywall, and we noticed that it started off with a pretty high cost, kind of similar to what you guys are charging. But then over time, they started making it a lot cheaper. They've had a lot of specials. Do you think that you guys might, how strong will you stick to your prices?
I know what we're going to do is a variety of reader acquisition campaigns, which, similar to the way we've always done them in print, often have an introductory offer or some other component to encourage encourage people to try the product for some period of time and really make a longer term evaluation of it. Again, we feel as though if we can get people to read what we do, then that is a very good way to encourage them to continue to read and continue to subscribe. So, price promotions as part of special offers or other types of promotions that we would use and have traditionally used in print, we would envision using in the digital space as well.
Okay, well, thanks a lot. We really appreciate you joining us.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me, and thanks for the kind words on the site. I hope we see you online frequently there.
I mean, I think the biggest question is going to come down to the dual site thing, and I've seen people already complaining. Like, when you think about it, okay, where are you going to go? If you're thinking of, maybe the point is none of us even go to a site that way anymore. We're always going through social media, so maybe we don't even think about, well, I'd like to see what's going on in Boston. I'll go to boston.com or bostonglobe.com. Maybe it's just, we search and go through search or through social media, so maybe it doesn't even matter. Maybe that's what they're kind of saying. Like, who cares what the URL is or where you start? It's not about portals anymore.
Yeah, which I guess segues into guardiannews.com versus guardian.co.uk.
Exactly. So let's talk about that. The Guardian it just launched guardiannews.com as their new U.S. site. This is something that they've done before with Guardian America. I'm not sure exactly when that was, but that didn't work out. Now, you obviously have a disclaimer as far as, selling paid content to The Guardian and working with them for a little while. What's your take on this? And, do you think that this is going to be they've hired Nick Davies, who is their UK investigative reporter, who's done some really incredible work, especially on the phone hacking scandal. And they also hired Anna Marie Cox, a well-known blogger and reporter and Washington insider, who is going to, give them a good voice. So they're bringing on some people this time and some personalities and some strong reporters. Do you think this is going to have a chance to do better than the last effort?
Yeah, so of course I'm biased party. I was sold my company, was very closely involved in all kinds of things. I'm certainly not involved in the relaunch of Guardian US operations because I left way before that, and I probably wouldn't have been involved even if I was there as part of paid content.
Right.
So one of the things I think is true is that you have to give them marks for trying again and again and again. This is the third time trying to break America. The first time they tried to do it in print through their Guardian Weekly thing that they did, and then that didn't work. Then they tried Guardian America, that didn't work, and now they're trying GuardianNews.com. And so you have to give them firstly marks for that in the face of sort of slowdown of all kinds of in the newspaper industry itself. So I think they're trying to hedge their bets. UK, saturated market, much smaller market. US, much larger market, much more potential for growth. A lot of the traffic comes from US. I don't know. I mean, I don't particularly get the point of a separate page. What I do get, and I think the bigger point here, is that they're hiring people for US because they were covering US with a very anemic staff for the last however many years they've been covering US. And they had a staff that when they were doing Guardian America, they had a bureau in DC that they fired all of them, then moved whatever people were left over to New York, actually out of the paid content offices. Now they have moved into a much bigger office of their own with this relaunch. And they brought in a lot of people from UK who are very digitally savvy, more of the media, more of people who are from their media section of The Guardian over to US because they're just a lot more digitally savvy.
Right. Janine Gibson is the editor-in-chief, right?
Of Guardian News, yes.
Right.
And so I think the bigger story here is the fact that they're hiring in US and covering US in a more intimate way. I don't know if GuardianNews.com itself, which is probably at this point really is just one page. And even though they're saying there are going to be more internal pages, so they probably hire a bunch of bloggers, I'm guessing, or aggregate or syndicate a bunch of third-party content onto the site.
They're saying they're going to hire 20 to 30 people, not necessarily reporters, not necessarily bloggers, but it could be, you know, producers, could be a mix of people.
Yeah, so I think that's their – I think, the other issue would be they haven't been able to figure out the business structure in terms of how do you sell it, what do the sales team look like, what are they selling to the U.S. advertisers here. I think that will be a much bigger problem going ahead.
Well, let's talk about the Philadelphia. In Philadelphia, the newspapers are kind of under one umbrella, and that Philadelphia Media Group and Philly.com have decided to launch a subsidized Android tablet, an Arnova 10 G2 Android tablet. And the deal is that if you sign up for a two-year paid subscription to the newspaper content for, I guess it's about $10 a month, over 2 years you can get the tablet for $99, or if you get a one-year subscription for $12.99 a month, you pay $129 for this tablet. You know, it's an interesting concept. It's something I think that's been tried in Europe as well, this idea that you would subsidize a tablet. One of the advertisers, I believe, they have a few advertisers that are kind of stepping up and being part of this. I think they might have apps that are kind of built into the tablet. So there's actually some interesting kind of innovation and possibilities. I mean, we don't know how good this tablet really is, but a very cheap tablet. I mean, we saw what happened with the HP tablet when they cut that down to about $99. You know, people went crazy to go get them, even if, you know, whether they liked it or not. I don't know if this is at the quality level of the HP, you know, WebOS, but you know, people obviously love tablets and they love cheap ones.
Yeah, I think it'd be a very interesting experiment. I was trying to think through what are the equivalents of, let's say, in the mobile space, where branded one function or one company branded phones have did, like Skype phone or something, have they done well? They have,
or like the Disney or the ESPN phone or the
ES phone. Oh yeah, remember that? I know. Yeah, wow. We
shouldn't talk about this for them, and that's not going to make them feel too good.
I know, no, but I was in the middle of, because we were covering it day in day out back then when I was at paid content. So yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I think there are a lot of possibilities. So this Android phone is unlocked, right? Android tablet is unlocked, meaning you can download anything besides the other stuff that they will have it on it?
It says that it comes with an Amazon Marketplace or an Amazon Android Marketplace.
Oh,
so I'm guessing you
can... Amazon Marketplace, right. Okay, interesting.
So I think, and it says there's email and there's other apps and things. I'm guessing it's you know, relatively open. If it's Android and it's built to not be, let's say, as close as what we think the Amazon tablet would be like, you know, maybe they're just going to have some default, you know, icons on there from their advertisers and things like that. But my guess is that you'll still be able to open up the things that, you know, download the things that would run on an Android tablet.
Yeah, and I think they will have to mark. I think that it may or may not work. What is does allow them is to do marketing to people who are not as digitally savvy, you haven't thought about it. Less digitally savvy, as I just said. So it would at least introduce them if they so desire to this concept, and will allow Philly Group to be able to market it in interesting offline ways. I'm guessing they have a big marketing campaign, offline marketing campaign, local campaign that they will have demos and all kinds of other stuff with the tablet. And I think it's more of a transitory thing than anything. As the tablet adoption expands, these kind of experiments would look kind of quaint in about 5 years.
When everyone already has their own tablet.
When everyone has some version of the tablet, yes. So, but it's an interim strategy that expands the market.
All right. Well, thanks a bunch.
I think this was more fun than we thought newspapers would be.
Definitely. We're never that excited about it, but then when we start talking about it, it all comes back to us. For whatever reason, we're always just, I wouldn't say we're obsessed, but I'd say that it's easy to start getting caught up into, you know, what's going to happen with newspapers, because it seems like they're the ones who got hurt the most. They're the ones who've had to deal with disruption the most. And they're the ones that I guess are finally coming around to really doing the experiments they should have done years ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think the question this would be, would Boston Globe have done what they've done now if they were not part of the New York Times group?
Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS MediaShift, along with co-host Rafat Ali. We want to thank our special guest, Chris Mayer from the Boston Globe, as well as our sponsor, the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism, as well as the PBS and the Knight Foundation for helping make this podcast possible. Don't forget to check out all the news, polls, and events over at PBS MediaShift at pbs.org/MediaShift and our sister site, IdeaLab, at pbs.org/IdeaLab. We'll catch you next week.